So, to give a little sense of our plan here.
So, just to give you a little bit of an overview, and as we often do, especially when we get to start something on a Tuesday, so what I'd like to try to do today is to kind of lay out some possibilities and some issues, and then hopefully tomorrow, and hopefully we'll be able to do it in a succinct fashion to try to bring them together and put them in perspective. So here, I've been backing into the issue of Chazaka and Rov. And now, on the bottom of Yud, Amid Beis, on the top of Yud Aleph, so the Gemara introduces the concept of Chazaka and Rov more frontally. Essentially, yeah, where do you get this thing from, this idea of a Chazaka and this idea of a Rov? Where does it come from? And essentially, what we have is on the bottom of Yud Amid Beis, the Gemara is saying, where does Chazaka come from? And on the top of Yud Aleph and Aleph, we have, for whatever reason, a more often quoted Gemara, Menah Hamilsod Amar Abadan Zil Basaruba. So how do you know this idea that we're supposed to follow a rove? And the Gemara then asks, Minolan, well, what do you mean Minolan? Tachsiv Achir Ab Mahatos, Feresh Pasuk. Why are you asking? So to that, the Gemara clarifies, to use the term very loosely, Ruba de Issa Kaman, Kigon Tes Chanuyos, Visenhedrin, Lo Kami Bayalon. Ki Kami Bayalon, Ruba de Lessa Kaman, Kigon Kata Nikitana, Minoa. And then the Gemara goes on to bring various possibilities, and it continues. Recommended, if possible, you go up to top of your Beis and Aleph, so obviously it's quite a lot of Gemara here. But the Gemara essentially continues with this whole path. So what we want to try to do today is try to get some kind of perspective on the basic issues. And first, just the terms. So the term of Ruba de Issa Kaman and Ruba de Lessa Kaman, that is not defined in the Gemara. Because we needed to talk about some earlier sugyas, so we used a rough definition because we needed it when we talked about, even quite a while ago, when we talked about Rov Mitzuyin Eitzel Shchuta Mochen Hein, whether that was one kind of a Rov or a second kind of a Rov or maybe a whole different third kind of a Rov. So we talked about those terms in that context, and we just used a working definition just so we could get through that discussion. But now here we are, the Gemara is bringing it up, and the Gemara doesn't tell us what it means. It gives us examples. So one thing we need to do is to try to figure out what the words mean, or what they could mean, and then, very significantly, what would the meanings imply for their different categorizations. In other words, what is a Ruba de Issa Kaman, and then what is a Ruba de Issa Kaman? What do the words mean? And then, if it means this, then what does that mean for how we apply it? So we need to figure out that. And then we have to consider, one of the other things we'll try to do by tomorrow at least, is clearly there are going to be cases where Rov does work and cases where Rov doesn't work, and cases where Rov beats a Chazaka and cases where it doesn't. So we want to try to get some clarity in some principles of when it's one and when it's the other. And because there's so much Gemara to see, I didn't give you any Rishonim to look at, but one of the issues that's very significant that animates a lot of the Rishonim is the fact that we know that we do rely on Rov even for issues of very high consequence, such as Dinei Nefashos, as becomes clear from this Gemara. And yet, we also have a statement a couple of places in Shas, subject to a machlokes, but a statement nonetheless, that ein holchen b'mamon acher harov, that is, we're not going to follow a rov in monetary matters, which, as the Rishonim ask, is hard to understand. Why should it be that in the fashos, the stakes are so much higher, and yet we follow a rov, and mamonis, apparently, we don't. So these are all issues we're going to try to get some kind of perspective on, and hopefully they are issues that will give us a general framework with which to relate to Rove issues and to be able to carry that with us. So, first of all, just to try to understand the terms, Issa Kaman and Lassa Kaman. So, as a general introduction, should be aware that, you know, it's not defined explicitly here in the Gemara. The Gemara gives examples rather than defining it. So, in the later Svarim and Achronim, you have a number of different approaches. So I don't know if it's so productive necessarily to drown you in the names of who says what. Happy to provide you with a lot of reading material. But let's at least try to figure out what the various possibilities are. And then we can worry about who they're associated with. So how could you possibly translate these terms? All the information you have is that some knowledge of Aramaic to try to translate the words literally, and that the Gemara gives examples. So what's an Issa Kaman?
We know the statistics.
Okay, so what do you mean by know the statistics?
We could count the percentage, like we could give a number to it, and you see it in front of us.
Okay, so then you're working off the translation, also Issa Kaman, it's in front of us. So we have numbers, and we can see that there are 10 stores, 9 of them are kosher stores, 1 is a non-kosher store. So therefore, we can see it's 9 versus 1, and that's the Ruba de Issa Kaman. So then how are you defining Lassa Kaman?
Not in front of us, but we know it exists.
So meaning that it's just hard for us to count because it's too
abstract.
It's too abstract, or it's too broad?
Abstract, yeah.
Abstract. Okay, so literally, that's probably the most intuitive interpretation. And that's how some understand the Amud Eor and others, that's what we mean. Issa Kaman is we can look at it and we can count. And we see that's what we're talking about. And the Lassa Kaman is a more generalized rove, though we don't have access to numbers. Now, presumably, Ruba de Issa Kaman also don't necessarily need exact numbers, but the numbers are essentially calculable or visible to some degree. While Lassa Kaman, it's much harder to actually try to calculate from a numbers perspective. Yes, sir?
Me?
Yeah, Mark?
How come we're staying away from the Lashon of what's visibly tangible?
Oh, we're not. I mean, that's a possibility.
We're talking about numbers, but at least the way that we defined it in Bava Kamma was really directly as like, where we understood Ruba de Issa Kaman to be more like a chazaka. Something that wasn't visibly tangible, where we would imagine the mitzvah to be changed, just like from assumption. We have a chazaka so Ruba de Issa Kaman is more like an assumption, something that, or like a strong assumption, something that we're just sort of relying on in more of like a belief kind of way, whereas Ruba de Issa Kaman is visible, tangible, and quantifiable change.
Yeah, it's similar to what Mayor is saying. You're saying, but you're...
I'm asking if it's different.
Right, it's not necessarily different. You're saying, in terms of Issa Kaman, it's similar. In terms of Lassa Kaman, you say maybe you're defining Lassa Kaman a little differently, that it's not just too broad and out there, but that it comes simply from an assumption. What else could we possibly put forward? Any working with the words Issa Kaman, Lassa Kaman, any other interpretations of that? Yeah?
Maybe, I don't know how Issa the Kaman would factor in this, but saying Lassa the Kaman is kind of like a societal norm.
Okay, so...
Just the way things are.
And do you see that in the words at all? Do you see that?
Well, in the Gemara, I was talking about it, when I talked about Katan Katana.
Right.
I said that, you know, just the majority of Katanim are in Sarisa.
Right.
It's just like how it is.
Right.
You know, I don't know if you could count that, but it's just saying, I guess that's the usual way of life. It's like that.
So...
I don't know, though.
But is that work with a specific definition, and just is that different than what Maury said in terms of an assumption?
It's so different, but I don't know, if it's not like necessarily an assumption, it's just kind of like how everybody usually acts.
Okay. You know, there's some who understand the words of Issa Kaman and Lassa Kaman in a way that's maybe significantly different, that Issa Kaman means that the Rove and the Miut are in front of us. And Lassa Kaman means that the Miut is not in front of us. What do I mean by that? I mean that in order to calculate a Ruba de Issa Kaman, so you need to have all the parts in front of you. You need to have the big part and the small part. And to establish that the big part is bigger than the small part. And what's in the big part and what's in the small part. While when you have Aruba the lesser come on, so we're not really interested in the miyut. What the miyut is or how many miyuts there are not really the issue. The issue is just what we have in front of us. Is there a stam assumption or not? Is there a reason to say that min hastam this is something? You look a little perplexed. Right. That basically, when you, the idea of the Ruba Delesta come on, essentially, let's say, Rov Ketanim or not Srisim. Right. So, is that something which is going to be affected by how many Srisim there are? Or it's more just looking at this cut and saying that the default is that it's not a Saris, and therefore, that's the working premise. As opposed to Aruba D'Issachamon, where we're saying, well, because there's this many ropes and this many miyuts, it comes out that group A is the rope and group B is the miyut.
It doesn't stem from tangible numbers, it
stems from a default assumption. But the question about that is that one question, first of all, is one rov inherently stronger than the other? So you could have thought maybe, but I think it's a
Rashi says it goes far really to Chalik.
Well, Rashi were on Duffy base,
on,
yeah. Right, so that Rashi is important. I have to see, but is there a reason to say one is stronger than the other? So why are you saying that? I mean, you're in good company, but why?
It makes a chiluk.
Right, makes a chiluk, but maybe they're just different.
But neither of them is stronger. It's not really a chiluk.
They could.
You see this one. You can see this one. You don't need to prove both of them separately.
Well, they could just operate differently. Maybe it's not a kavachomer from one to the other. So the impression one gets reading this gemara, maybe more so reading the other gemaras that I pointed out to you, if you got up to the Gemara in Yevamos and the Gemara in Bechorus, you could come out from there thinking that a Aruba D'Issachamon is stronger. Because, for example, the Gemara there has a Salka Daitach that maybe Rabbanan, who argue in general, and Rameir is Chayish Lamiyot, he factors in the minority, that maybe Rabbanan would agree with a Aruba D'Issachamon. So that kind of creates the impression that Aruba D'Issachamon is stronger. But you don't have to read it that way. You could just read it as they're both different from each other. And therefore, we just don't have the same set of premises. And particularly in this Gemara, where, as Meir points out, is ultimately Rashi is going to have a somewhat open question as to how the conclusion is. You know, do Lamaisa, do we learn out one from the other, or is there a halach l'moshe misinai here, as far as the Gemara's question of what's the source for Ruba D'Lesa come on? So it's essentially an open question, but our Gemara basically is only focusing then on Lesa come on. It says, Issa come on, we know from a pasuk. So, Lesa, come on, we got to figure out. So, once we figure it out, though, does it make sense to say that if one has to be stronger, the Issa, come on, is stronger, or is there a svar to say the other way?
Well, I guess Lesa, come on, there's no tangible. The Mia, which is problematic, is not in existence per se.
In Lesa, come on?
Yeah.
Why do you say it's not in existence?
It doesn't have to be there.
Right, so that's an interesting point. And it's not going to necessarily bear out in terms of what everyone says, but it's an interesting premise in saying that Aruba D'Lesa, come on, basically we're saying it's possible for it to be different. But we don't know that it is different anyway.
Right. think my point is more that you don't necessarily know that there's anything problematic here.
Right, but with Ruby as a command, you also don't know, because maybe this is a good one.
Yeah, but you know that there's something here which isn't good.
There's something somewhere which isn't good.
Right.
So, you know, part of the issue here is also we're talking to Reuben the Issachaman, as some explain, we're working off the principle of kol deparish meruba parish. Anything that has been separated from the masses, we assume that it's from the majority of the masses. So that's our opening position with the Reuben the Issachaman, that we have something that was taken from a larger klal. And we need to know how to figure out what part of the klal it fits in. With Ruba the Lesser Command, we don't necessarily have anything that is parish from anything else. We just have one thing in front of us, and we don't know how to assess it. Now, numbers-wise, theoretically, Ruba the Lesser Command could be anywhere. It could be all over the map. You could have a default position, which is the overwhelmingly likely kind of position or reality, or you could have a situation where there's a lot of defaults. You could have, especially some of these roves could be much more variable, depending on societal factors. And we already saw, and we'll see more about this because it's going to tie in again, but a rove hatali b'maitz of a minig might undermine a rove. So, for example, here in the Gemara it says, gives the example of katan and katana. So, that's a physical reality. So, presumably, that's not going to change based on practice. It could change based on environmental factors. The degree to which these numbers could vary is probably similar on both sides. We talk about, like our Gemara also is going to bring up, about the assumption that somebody hits his father, so the assumption that the father is the father is based on the premise that Rov Ilo Sachar Abal, that most married women, the majority of their relationships are with their husband. And therefore, it's fair to assume that the son of any woman is also the son of the man she's married to. But clearly that's also societally dependent, or more societally dependent than Katan Ketana. The famous story they say about Rav Yonah Sanayevshitz, it's the kasha that if al pidin, somebody's father and mother both ask him for water at the same time, so the din is supposed to give the father first. So some ask, Chaim of others raised this question, that maybe we should say you should always prioritize the mother, because the mother is a vaday. And the father we only know based on this chazakah. So why don't we say that you should always prioritize the mother over the father? She's making a lot of assumptions about the reason for prioritizing things and how these things work. But supposedly, Rav Yonah Sanayevshitz responded that if you imagine that to prioritize your mother, because you assume that she's definitely the mother and the father is not so definite, no bigger bizayin to the mother that one can have than that. Right, that's not exactly an act of covet. To work off that premise, but that's, you know, it's like a joke of a response, but it kind of highlights how mixing some of the factors here bring up some very unusual conclusions. So that's a possibility also, that we're basically talking about a default, even though we don't know what the rest of the numbers are. The rest of the numbers could be very significant in the miut category. So, what also seems like a possibility, yeah, man.
What's the motivation to explain the Issachaman with the Lesachaman in the second way?
Which way? That it's
that it's about I
mean, that's about what's in front of us in terms of what we have to cheshbon?
Right.
Well, just that might, that's the reality, that when we try to figure out whether something is aruba or not in the issa kaman category, we have to know both numbers. Right? We have to know which the two.
Yeah, this is like the pashas of the lashon is just the row which we know the numbers and the row which we don't.
Right, that's definitely the most intuitive interpretation. But there are those who say it this way also, and it could lead to other nafkamidas in terms of what category something falls into. So that's also something to consider. So is it about what numbers are in front of us, or is it about what objects are in front of us? Do we have any interest in what's not in front of us? So if you're talking about aruba d'lesa kaman, we're essentially saying that all we're trying to evaluate is this one thing in front of us. Is it subject to some kind of default rule or not? And we're not paying attention to what the rest of the world is, even though there might be a very large number on the other side of the equation. So if you say it like that, it creates a interesting perspective. Rav Asher Weiss, in a sefer on Chumash and sefer Shmos, he has an essay about Rov and Acharav Mahatos. And you know, essentially what emerges, he says like this a little bit, but also you can put this together from other parts, that when it comes to Ruba Delesa Kaman, could be that essentially what the Torah is telling us is that we don't have to go looking for trouble. That you have something in front of you that Min Hastam is one way, so we're not mechuyev to assume that it could be something else. Not mechuyev to assume that it somehow deviated from the standard expectations. But when it comes to aruba d'issa kaman, it's not about that. We know that there is a suffix already. We know that there are good ones and bad ones, whatever category we're talking about. There's kosher meat and there's non-kosher meat. And we don't know which one this was. So the chiddush of Acharabim Lahatos is to tell you that you can assume that it's kosher. So it's a very different calculation. It's a very different premise. So if you focus on it that way, that what the Gemara is saying, it's possible to say that the Gemara is not favoring Ruba d'issa kaman at all. And, you know, possibly quite the opposite, although you're going to have to account for various things that we'll probably get to tomorrow. But in the case of a Ruba d'issa kaman, so you have a suffix. And the question is, what do you do about that suffix? Or, put differently, the question is, how do you define a suffix? We never have perfect knowledge. So what counts as a suffix? Now, if somebody comes to you on Rosh Chodesh and says, I'm not 1,000% sure I said Yal V'Yavo or not. So do you have to be 1,000% sure? Or, you know, let's say it was 3 hours ago, you daven mincha and you don't remember for sure. Okay, so you don't remember for sure. Is that called a suffix? So, a suffix, we're assuming a certain statistical breakdown to begin with. Right, we're assuming a roughly 50-50 kind of possibility set. Can't be so precise, but a suffix really means that essentially there's equal probability of one possibility or the other. So when you have a concept of rov, so the halacha is telling you that you have the right to assume if there's more of one than the other, that that's not really a problem. I'm hedging my words by saying not really a problem, because do I mean to say it's not really a suffix? Or maybe it's a suffix you don't have to worry about, which makes a difference. And the Shmaisa talks about this, that once you have a rove, does that categorize something as no longer a suffix? Or is it still called a suffix? Just you're allowed to act a certain way. So, for example, if the Torah says, the way the Gemara understands, that midin Torah, a suffix mamzer, is mutter. So what if you have a situation where you know that there's a rove of psulim, there's a rove of mamzerim? So is that no longer a suffix? Or is it still a suffix? Just rove lets you go in a certain direction. But it doesn't change the fact that it's bad some a suffix. And if there's a halacha regarding suffix, like suffix mamzer is mutter, then maybe it would still apply even when there's a rove. Maybe rove only tells us what to do when we have a suffix in general and we have no other rule telling us to go one way or another. So we follow the rove. So that's a discussion, and the Shmais and others talk about that it could be that even when you have a rove, it's still called a suffix. But the suffix, we're allowed to treat a certain way. So if that's the case, so then maybe Ruba Delessa come on, it's really pretty radically different. Because essentially what it's telling you is that you don't have to treat this as a suffix. The possibility that something changed or something deviated from the norm, it's possible, but you're not mechuyev to assume every possible scenario. So it is possible to say that a Ruba Delessa Kaman is more of an absolute halachic reality than a Ruba Issa Kaman is. Now, counterintuitively, there are those who say that, despite, sounds like the opposite of what I just said, that Ruba Issa Kaman, we're going to worry less about the miyut. The miyut is going to be negated. And Aruba Delessa Kaman, it won't be. Now, it sounds the opposite of what we just said, because we said that with Issa Kaman, there's a suffix, and with Lessa Kaman, there's no reason to worry about the suffix. But for technical reasons, Rabbi Akiva Eiger has a truth about this, that once we have the din of Acher Rav Mahatos, it means the rove knocks out the miyut. So the miyut has been dealt with, essentially, even though we know it's there, but it's been addressed. It's a part of our cheshbon. Well, the Ruba Delessa Kaman, the miyut does not come on, is not in front of us, and therefore it hasn't been addressed. And therefore, maybe it still exists as a force to be reckoned with. So, in terms of the flow of the Gemara, and we're going to attempt to make this point, so it's possible to say that the nature of these drushes are very different than other drushes. You know, we have, let's say, for this purpose, three kinds of, we have any more, but just for the purposes in front of us, that we have three kinds of ways we could learn something out from the Torah. The Torah could be very explicit and tell us a din. We could have something that's not so explicit. You would never have figured it out on your own, but we have Yud Gimel Midosh HaTorah Nedreshes Behen, and there's an extra word or something like that. And that teaches us a din that we know through, thanks to the Torah Sheba'al Peh. Or there could be a third type, which is maybe what this Gemara is getting at. So the idea of Acher Rabba Mahatos, that's essentially an explicit din. That the Torah is saying that you should follow the rove to make policy decisions when you have a rove in a miyut. The Gemara over here that's saying, okay, that we got, but what about Ruba Delessa come on? So the types of examples that we're giving And maybe you should worry this animal is a trefoil. But basically, what the Gemara is saying is, here's a bunch of dinim, which couldn't exist unless we accept the concept of aruba delesa kaman. So what it's basically telling you is, not we have a drasha, or we have a din, but essentially, how do we know that the Torah lets us function without having to worry about non-standard possibilities? So it's not so much learning from any one pasuk or the other in the sense of a drasha. The Gemara is telling you that here are a bunch of dinim which only work if we work off certain premises. So it's basically saying that that shows you that it's reasonable and appropriate, al pi din Torah, to accept the default standard as the working premise. And that you only have to question it if you have a reason to question it. So that would work well with the definition of Ruba Delesa Kaman, is basically saying that's what you have in front of you, and you don't have any reason to assume differently. And essentially what our Gemara is telling us is that here are examples that the Torah works off that premise. That the Torah doesn't expect you to essentially go looking for trouble. Okay, so that gives us a little bit of a framework, a little bit of a foundation with which to consider what we're even talking about, because every other point that's going to come up in Rove is going to assume a familiarity with Issa Kaman and Lesa Kaman. So hopefully with that, we can consider some of the other issues. And again, our hope is to get all those in to one session tomorrow. So I look forward to seeing everybody tomorrow. And wish everybody a safe and warm and dry Tuesday afternoon. And I will...